Delusions of grandeur generally have people believing they're more important than they actually are, and not even nations are immune from that belief. Here's Skip Heitzig.
Well, Israel was like that in a sense, in this sense. They thought, we're God's chosen people. We're okay. He chose us, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We have such a great lineage. We're a special group of people. And they were. They were special in that God selected them. But at the same time, because they started drawing away from the Lord who had saved them, away from the instructions that God gave them, though they were technically God's chosen people, they were still in deep bondage or going back that way.
Make the connection.
The Titanic was a ship that everyone believed was unsinkable. It was even proclaimed that God himself could not sink that ship. I'm sure most of you know the tragic irony of that story, as the Titanic ended up striking an iceberg and sank to the bottom of the ocean in just a couple of hours during its maiden voyage. The ship's hull was compromised in just the right place to seal its fate. And today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig reveals how compromise was having the same effect on the nation of Israel. Before we begin, though, you can help people all over the world avoid the compromising effects of sin as a member of the Global Connectors. Here's all the details.
Paris, the city of lights, the city of love, but a city that needs to hear about real love, the agape love of God. Paris may have a reputation of being a city for its many streets, canals, and bridges, and romantic ambiance, but only the love of Christ will satisfy our desire for true love. Help us share this good news in the streets of Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Join today for just $25 a month. And when you do, not only will you help us share the truth about love with people all over the world, you'll also receive a free resource each month. This month, you'll receive a teaching from Michael Dente from Calvary Chapel, Paris.
In a city so known, therefore, for its immorality, its intellectualism, and its riches, it would appear that Paul only saw one solution to cure their spiritual ills, and that was to know Christ, to know Jesus Christ, and to know him crucified.
When people think romance, they often think of Paris. But in order to truly experience love, what we need is not a trip to a city of romance, but a trip to the cross. Help us share the good news of God's love in Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Call today, 1-800-922-1888, or visit connectionradio.org.
Well, Global Connectors are helping us far and wide spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. We'd sure like to tell you more about that when you call us at 1-800-922-1888. You know, during the time of Judges, the nation of Israel was a sinking ship, damaged by the iceberg of sin. Although rescue attempts were made, we'll learn that the true tragedy is that Israel kept steering right back to that same iceberg, only to be compromised all over again. Stay with us here on The Connection to find out more.
And make the
Not everyone who goes to church ends up getting saved. How does that relate to the book of Judges? Well, open to chapter 11. Let's join Skip Heitzig to find out.
How many of you grew up going to church? Show of hands, you grew up going to church. Keep them up for just a minute and look around and see how many people. Okay, hands down. How many of you, maybe though growing up going to church, were saved later on, not necessarily because of the church you grew up in? Raise your hands. Okay. Interesting statistic seen here. that just because one goes to church doesn't necessitate they're either hearing the truth or, though hearing it, are responding to it. So that you might say, in any church service at any given time, there could still be people in great and desperate need. True story I came across, kind of a bizarre story, but a 16-year-old girl was kidnapped and held hostage. She was captured, and for 4 months she was bound and hidden away. Guess where? In a church, a little church attic in Memphis, Tennessee. So think of the irony. Week after week, for 4 weeks, week after week, people would gather in the church and sing and worship and fellowship and read the Bible and get blessed, while at the same time, there was a hostage, someone in bondage, someone wanting to be rescued. Well, she was finally found by two maintenance workers and she was freed, but until then, she was a captive, a helpless captive in this church. Now, just think about that for a moment. A prisoner in church. Well, that, in a spiritual sense, can happen all the time. People who go to church, who hear truth, who sing songs, but who don't necessarily have their lives freed from the bondage that comes from Christ. Well, Israel was like that in a sense, in this sense. They thought, we're God's chosen people. We're okay. He chose us, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We have such a great lineage. We're a special group of people. And they were. They were special in that God selected them. But at the same time, because they started drawing away from the Lord who had saved them, away from the instructions that God gave them, though they were technically God's chosen people, they were still in deep bondage or going back that way. Now, we touched on that briefly last week as we covered the first 10 chapters of the book of Judges. And if you remember briefly, an overview, a recap, is that they went from conquest to compromise. They were conquerors of this new land under Joshua. They were king of the hill. They were taking all of the areas God had given to them. They were living in conquest, victory. But in Judges, they go from conquest to compromise. And we saw this sin cycle repeated over and over and over again. And there were phases, if you remember, to that sin cycle. Number one, they rebelled. Rebellion. They decided, this life of faith, this life of following God, these laws, these rules and regulations, it's not for us. They became enamored with other worship systems. Their neighbors were doing different things. They wanted to be a part of it. So they went from that, walking with the Lord, to rebellion. After rebellion came retribution. God allowed them to be sold into the people who worshiped those false gods so that they felt the oppression of captivity, which made them feel really bad. And so they cried out to the Lord in the third, which is repentance. God, we're sorry, we blew it, we bummed you out, help us. Which brought them into the fourth phase of the sin cycle, restoration. And then you'd think that maybe after one or two of those, they'd learn. They did it seven times. That's recorded at least in the book of Judges. So from conquest to compromise. Now tonight, in finishing this book, we're going to go from compromise to chaos. And the book ends, I'd love it to say, and they had a little white picket fence and they lived happily ever after. It doesn't end that way. It actually ends worse than how it begins. They go from compromise to chaos. And here's the principle. With the absence of authority comes the presence of anarchy. Take away authority and you will have in its place anarchy. And that's how the book will end. Every man does what is right in his own mind. Pure existentialism. That's how the book is going to end tonight. So we're dealing with a period of history, roughly about 350 years of Israeli history, where 13 judges, deliverers, warriors, leaders 12 men, one woman, we covered her last week, Deborah, deliver the children of Israel in that sin cycle, and they're brought back. So now we're in chapter 11, and chapter 11 and 12 give us the next judge, the ninth judge, a guy by the name of Jephthah. And there were enemies once again. They were flexing their muscles. These now were the Ammonites, and they're saying basically, we're the new kids on the block. We're going to take over. So, verse 1. Now Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty man of valor. That is, he was an adept military man, a real fighter. But he was the son of a harlot. And Gilead begot Jephthah, that is, through a harlot. He was an illegitimate son. Thus, he was scorned, scorned by his stepbrothers and scorned by his community. Down in verse 3, then Jephthah fled from his brothers and dwelt in the land of Tob. And worthless men banded together with Jephthah and went out raiding with him. Now, when it says worthless men, these were idle men. They didn't have anything else going on in their life. They were bored. They wanted some action. They were kind of looking for a gang, their own little family. And they found one with Jephthah. So like David in the wilderness, when Saul was chasing him and a band of men rallied around him, so it is now with Jephthah. Look down at verse 29. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and passed through Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead, he advanced toward the people of Ammon. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord. And he said, if you will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet with me, when I return in peace from the people of Ammon, that surely will be the Lord's. And I will offer it up as a burnt offering. Vows such as these were not compulsory. They were voluntary. They were made by someone just because, typically, for those who were pagans, out of superstition. You know, you've all made bargains with God growing up. God, if you do this, I promise I'll go to church forever. Like the guy who was falling off of his house. He was up there with a hammer and nail, and he was nailing down some shingles, and he started sliding, and he prayed, oh God, I'm sorry. Just save me. Don't let me die. I promise I'll serve you forever. I'll be in church Sunday. Just then a nail caught him. He looked down and said, never mind, Lord. The nail took care of it. Well, here's a guy who makes a vow to the Lord. Whatever comes out of my house will be dedicated completely to the Lord. Now, something to notice about Jephthah before we get into the weird part. He begins his battle wisely. He begins by talking to the Lord. He begins in prayer. He knew that he's not going to have any victory without the Lord. So he makes a vow. He's in communication with God. He wants victory, but he's not going to go out on his own. He has some sort of relationship with God. There was a pretty famous coach that told his players every time they lost a game, these words, look, I told you what to do in order to win and not to lose. You didn't do what I told you, and now you lost. This coach was very adamant that you've got all of the gear needed to win the game, and you've got the instructions to win the game. But if you don't follow the instructions, you'll never win the game. And just like an athlete who can have all the right equipment, Christians can have all the right equipment, Bible, church, singing, victorious Christian living courses, discipleship classes, etc., etc. But unless we apply the instructions of the manufacturer to our lives, and I would say on a daily basis, we're not going to get very far. Something else I want to throw in. He made a vow. It was all his own vow. It wasn't because God told him to. He made a vow. In Leviticus chapter 27, and in Deuteronomy chapter, I think, 28, and in Numbers chapter 30, those are all chapters that give regulations on how to make a vow to the Lord. It governs the use of vows to the Lord. Now keep that in mind as we go on. Verse 32. So Jephthah advanced toward the people of Ammon to fight against them. and the Lord delivered them into his hands. Verse 33, thus the people of Ammon were subdued. Verse 34, when Jephthah came to his house at Mizpah, there was his daughter coming out to meet with him with timbrels and dancing. She was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son or daughter. And it came to pass when he saw her that he tore his clothes and he said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You are among those who trouble me, for I have given my word to the Lord and I cannot go back on it. So she said to him, my father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, because the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the people of Ammon. Then she said to her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me alone for 2 months, that I may go and wander in the mountains and bewail my virginity, my friends and I. And so he said, go, send her away for 2 months. She went with her friends and bewailed her virginity on the mountains. And it was so that at the end of 2 months, she returned to her father, and he carried out his vow with her, which he had vowed. She knew no man. And it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went 4 days each year to lament the daughter of Jephthah, the Gileadite. Now, you know, you come across in the Bible every now and again a really weird story. It's sort of like Ripley's Believe It or Not. You know, Ripley's Believe It or Not, I was on their website, and, you know, there's some weird things that show up, like a 1,500-pound pumpkin won the biggest pumpkin award this year up in Northern California. I think it was grown. 1,500 pounds. Another Ripley's Believe It or Not I found is there was a cow in Cambodia that was taken into custody by the police. It was arrested. Believe it or not. Because it was wandering out in traffic causing accidents. So they arrested the cow. And then they said, holy cow. No, I'm sorry, that's India. Okay, so they arrested the cow, and then they found the owner and arrested the owner. Well, the Bible has stories sort of like that, you know, believe it or not stories, like Jacob when he put that lamb's wool on his arms and tried to smell real gnarly like an outdoors man and have a deep voice, and he pulled a fast one over on his dad who thought he was his brother Esau. It's a weird story. Or the story of Balaam, who's trying to go away from the Lord and the donkey's holding him back, and finally the donkey talks to him. That's a weird story. And then I think it's like Mr. Ed, right? There, look. Look at that. They found Mr. Ed playing ping pong, believe it or not. Well, that's false. He didn't really play ping pong. But this story really did happen, and it's a weird one. You say, why did you just do that, Skip? Simply because I wanted to show you Mr. Ed playing ping pong. No, listen. What is going on here? Did this judge Jephthah, in carrying out his vow that he made to the Lord, kill his daughter? Some people will say yes. You know, people who love to argue Bible stuff will love to take you to this story. And so they say, look, this man killed for the Lord his own daughter. I don't think so. Not necessarily. In fact, I don't believe that's at all what happened. And here's why. We know from the entire story, when we read it, that Jephthah had a good working knowledge of Old Testament law, Mosaic law. And he would have known that God strictly forbade human sacrifice. Number two, it was a spiritually dark time, granted. But if he were to have tried to kill his daughter, probably his neighbors, at least a few of them, would have stopped him. Like, this is madness. You're not going to do this. You remember the story of King Saul when he vowed a vow and Jonathan had broken the vow, so he tells his men, I'm going to kill Jonathan, my son. They step in and go, no, buckaroo. You're not going to kill your son. We're going to make sure that you don't do that. They stopped him from doing that. That probably would have happened here. Number three, let's say he was going to sacrifice his daughter. Where would he have done that at? Shiloh, the tabernacle. So can you imagine going up to a priest with your daughter? Here's my sacrifice, kill her. What priest in his right mind, or even if you had a demented priest, there'd be some priest that would hold him back. Number four, later on in the Bible, the prophet Samuel speaks of Jephthah favorably as a good man, a godly man, a man of faith, one that is an example of leadership. And in the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 11, several judges, including Jephthah, are mentioned as men of great faith who trusted in the Lord for the spoiling of their enemies' goods. If you look back in verse 31, it says, this is his vow now, whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. Now you see the little word and. Hebrew scholars, the ones that I have studied, will say that the word and could also be translated or. And there are some translations that bear this out. So it could read, whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet with me shall surely be the Lord's, or I will offer it up as a burnt sacrifice. In other words, if it's a person, I'll dedicate that person to the Lord. If it's an animal, I'll sacrifice that animal to the Lord. Now, this is what I think happened. When she came out, he was forlorn and bewildered because he knew he'd lost his daughter. He made a vow. So what did he do? He probably brought her to the tabernacle to serve in a capacity of being an attendant at the tabernacle for the rest of her life. There is a passage in Exodus 38 that refers to the serving women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle. And just as later on, young Samuel will be dedicated to the Lord for his service in the tabernacle, it seems that there were gals who were dedicated to serving their whole life. So, in being dedicated to the Lord, she wouldn't get married. She would be a perpetual virgin. And you'll notice in the text, that's the emphasis. They're not bewailing her death, they're bewailing her perpetual virginity. She's going to be dedicated. She won't be able to have her own family. She's not going to carry on her father's or the family's name. So that name goes out, so to speak, through that child in Israel.
You know, you don't have to go through life rudderless. I think you've seen how that's worked out for Israel here in the book of Judges. But you don't have to follow that same pattern. Jesus Christ can be your rudder, and he'll guide you and direct you through all the stormy waters of life. Now, you can choose to cast him aside and go your own way, but that never worked out well for Israel. So why would you want to do any better? That's all the time we have for today. But as we end, we want to let you know about Skip's new book on how to make a mark in this life for Christ.
There are over 6 billion people in the world, and yet we all have a unique fingerprint. Now consider this. There are so many people that need to hear about Jesus Christ, and each of us have a personality and calling that will help make that happen. But only if we are faithful and obedient. So, what sort of mark will you leave on this world? Will it be a life of self-indulgence or a path of selfless service? That's a choice only you can make. And be sure your decision will leave its mark, either wood, hay, and stubble, or a priceless life of serving Jesus Christ. In Skip Heitzig's new book, Godprint, discover how God used a single man named Abraham to change the world forever, and how he can do the similar work through each and every one of us. Plus, when you order Godprint, we'll also send you The Royal Road of Love, featuring a special CD teaching plus 2 original songs by Skip Heitzig.
There is no subject so universally treated, written about, sung about, than love. You couldn't count all the love songs that have been written. Love songs to girlfriends, to boyfriends, to husbands, to wives, to pets. Why? Simply because we all crave love. We all want to know that we are genuinely, unconditionally loved. We want love more than anything, and we will do anything to get it.
Get these resources for just $25 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. The impression God left on this world through Abraham resonates to this day. What sort of impression might he make through you? Learn how to make your mark for Christ in the new book, Godprint, by Skip Heitzig. Order today and we'll also send you The Royal Road of Love, featuring a message and original songs from Skip Heitzig. Both the book and the CD set are just $25. Call 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org.
We'd also be happy to send you a copy of today's message. Maybe you'd like to review it or share it with someone you know. Whatever the reason, we can send you a copy on CD for just $6, which includes shipping, when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. You can also write us here at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection at the foot of the cross. And study the Word of God and find the way into His love. Make the connection.
We'll conclude our study in the book of Judges next time, so be sure to join us as we learn why Israel eventually became so desperate for a king. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.